quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on unceded stolen lands of the Kutsi, Coquitlam, and Stolo First Nations. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship of the lands and the waters. I'm Leslie. First of all, happy belated Vancouver Pride, and when I say that, I mean that in the most anti-capitalist, most intersectional feminist, most abolitionist, anti-imperialist way possible. You know, even though the essence and spirit of Pride may have been lost to the corporations and to homo nationalism, we still honor the fact that Vancouver has a very special reason why it celebrates Pride during this particular time of year. So happy that. And today's episode is very exciting for me because it is the first part of what's going to be a three-part series. I've been wanting to talk about this topic for a very long time. And if you've been a long-time listener of Typically Tuesdays, then you probably have gotten the drift kind of already that I like to try to do something special for the Vancouver Pride episodes. And while this is not having anything to do with Vancouver Pride, I'm not critiquing it, I'm not talking about Pride in any way, I am talking about something very gay and close to my heart, which is girls love manga, Yuri manga. Now, in case you don't know, girls love is the umbrella term to describe stories depicting romantic relationships between women in Japanese literature and media, and I'll be talking about that genre in comics form. Girls Love covers two subgenres. One of them is shoujo ai, which is more so about implicit relationships between girls, and then there's Yuri, which is more so about overt relationships, established relationships between girls. And oh, I love Yuri manga so much, and I have been wanting to recommend underrated Yuri manga to, I mean, I'll recommend it to anyone. Honestly, I'll recommend it to anyone. But I've been going through some stuff lately, and I just want to talk about things that I like. And so this series exists. I'm going to start off today's episode with a little bit of an explanation about the history of the genre, and then we'll jump right into the first part of my recommendations later on in this hour. But for now, let's listen to some music, as the subject is about girls' love. The songs are maybe in some way interpreted as kind of sapphic, as kind of queer, as kind of lesbianic and gay. This one is ripe for the season by Not Equal Me, and recommended to me by ex-member of Non-Sweet Emily. This one has a music video that is all about girls falling in love with each other. And it's a fun time. I hope you get into it. I hope you enjoy it. This is Kimi wa kono natsu koe o suru, You Will Fall in Love the Summer, by Not Equal Me.
This is Bird Note. Meet the secretary bird, a bird of prey like no other on Earth. Picture, if you can, a slim eagle striding through the grasslands of sub-Saharan Africa on tall, slender legs like those of a crane. Standing 4 feet tall, the secretary bird is beautiful, feathered in silver, set off by black wings and leggings. The face is half covered in bright red skin. Beyond the black tail extend two long white plumes tipped in black. And from the back of the head dangles a spray of long black feathers. Utterly fantastic in appearance, these specialized raptors are also serious carnivores. Secretary birds track down their prey not on the wing, but on foot, often walking more than 20 miles a day. They hunt rodents, snakes, insects, lizards, and other animals, dispatching them by stamping repeatedly with rapid, powerful kicks of their talons. Secretary, in the bird's name, might follow from its black head quills, reminiscent of 19th century human secretaries with black quill pens. But more probably, secretary derives from the Arabic word for hunter bird. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Did you hear that secretary bird? Like, come on. That thing's a dinosaur. Come on. That is so cool. Hey, it's Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Super excited to share some stuff on today's show today. Mostly GL comic recommendations. I have been wanting to do an episode like this for a very, very long time. I am a big Girls Love comic enthusiast. And before we begin sharing that list, I think it's good to talk a little bit about what GL is, because, and Yuri Manga and Shoujo Ai is, because I think that it is a site of complexity and valid contestation and debate, and it has a very rich history as well. But when I tell you that these are stories about romances between women, you might be inclined to think that, oh, so it's like lesbian literature, or that it's queer literature. And the fact of the matter is that it, you know, that is a part of the discussion. Is GL manga appropriately considered like queer literature? Or is it literature that has queer characteristics? Let's talk a little bit about that. Now, I'm no expert, okay? I have a fascination and passion for girls' love and boys' love manga and comics. However, I am not a comic historian. I am not a historian in general. This information that I'm about to share is learned from many different sources, and I'll link to those sources in the show notes of this episode when it goes up on our archive at cjsf.ca later on this weekend. But bear with me here. This is stuff that I have learned throughout the years. I've kind of like tried to put some of the pieces together, and I might not be all that correct. So if you're interested in this topic, be like me and do more research later on as you come across it. Let's talk about girls' love. Girls' love literature. Okay, again, it is, the term girls' love is an umbrella term to describe genres of literature that originated in Japan but have since become popular throughout East Asia and Southeast Asia, that depict romantic relationships and sexual relationships between women. Shoujo Ai is one of kind of like the more specified terms under the girls' love genre, which refers to sort of more covert or implicit depictions, whereas Yuri, as I'll use an anglicized tongue to talk about it, refers to more overt depictions of these relationships. And girls' love in general has its roots kind of in a genre of literature that began being popularized in the early 20th century in Japan called Class S. These stories depict very emotionally intimate and charged relationships between young women, oftentimes an older girl and a younger girl, in which the older girl kind of is responsible for guiding the younger girl about life and her identity and teaching her about the ways of society, which is where the S in class S comes from. S stands for sister, referring to a sisterhood, not necessarily in familial ties. These stories often are exploring ideas about identity, girlhood, independence, loneliness, desire, in an environment that is really quite physically removed from the rest of the world. It is almost as though in many of these class S stories that women are put in this kind of women-only sanctuary where they figure out all the stuff, all the themes that I had mentioned earlier, loneliness, girlhood, identity, and so on. These relationships in general between the female characters in these stories, they tend to be very chaste and pure, and so there is that kind of aesthetic trope in there where it's about young people who are untainted by both cis heteropatriarchy and wider society and its expectations for girls and young women in general. In this space, in this genre of class S, women and girls are protecting each other from those things, and also it very much protects them from those things as well. As I understand it, one of the reasons why class S becomes such a popular genre during the early 20th century in Japan is partly because Japanese society begins to have to confront questions around the independence of women, having to question the role of women in a society that is beginning to rapidly westernize and modernize. So these stories are kind of, one, dipping their toes in ideas around feminism with regards to women's independence and the role of women and girls in this new society. Also the role of education in women's lives, as many of these stories are set in all-female boarding schools and depict the lives of female students at these schools, but also because these stories really specifically center on really emotionally charged, really emotionally intimate relationships between women, it also poses this kind of, you know, slightly queer take on women's relationships. And what I mean by that is not necessarily just that, oh, these two women are best friends who are going to fall in love with each other because they tell each other everything and all that. But the settings in which these stories take place also allow us to consider an interesting kind of subversion around social expectations of girls and women, which in itself can, depending on the context, and the context being like cis heteropatriarchal early 20th century Japan, can potentially be read as being queer. Again, the concept, not necessarily queer as in sexuality. One of the examples of how class S genre work was really reflecting and wrestling with these questions of Japanese society at that time, as in the work of Yoshio Nobuko. She herself grew up in Japan during the time when society was beginning to rapidly westernize, and While she was sent to school for her early education, she had to begin to advocate for herself to convince her dad to continue to send her to school year after year, because at some point in when she became a teenager, he just felt that maybe it was no longer valuable for her to be highly educated. Yoshia's work, most well-known work maybe, is called Hanamonogatari, which means flower stories, and a lot of them are about these young women in boarding schools trying to like wrestle with the idea that after graduation they're going to have to be sent back into the real world, where maybe their certain things about them are no longer as valued as the way that they are in this kind of all-women utopia at the boarding school. And while I don't think that Yoshia wrote any really saucy or spicy stories about these women in intense emotional relationships with each other, she was known to sometimes, you know, put a chaste kiss of friendship in a few of her stories here and there. Yoshia herself was a lesbian, and she lived with her life partner Monma Chio for many years. When we talk about girls' love and even boys' love, which is the male counterpart to girls' love, we see that some of the elements of class S story tropes appear in these stories, and we begin to see a lot of that becoming popularized in comics during the mid-20th century, because at this time, comics gain a wider readership. Most notably, for the purposes of this episode, comics that are targeted towards young female readers, shoujo manga, meaning girls' manga, becomes more popular. And it's in a lot of these stories that we start to see that not only are themes around, you know, like self-determination and desire and yearning, loneliness, again, similar themes to Class S, not only are they also still being explored in shoujo manga, but there's also more depictions of queerness in these stories, particularly with characters who are gender non-conforming, such as in works like Princess Knight by Osamu Tezuka or Rose of Versailles by Ryoko Ikeda. During this time, darker and deeper themes around things like survival and abandonment and trauma, abuse, these things also begin to be explored more commonly, I would say. And a way that authors would do so is by writing these themes into stories depicting really intense relationships between boys and really intense relationships between girls. Some of the earliest popular BL manga, such as A Song of Tree, A Song of Wood and A Song of Wind and Trees, A Song of Wind and Trees by Keiko Takemiya, for example, is really horrible. It's really difficult to get through, and it is also about two boys who fall in love with each other. Another story called Dear Brother, also by Ryoko Ikeda, is incredibly wild, very, very wild, kind of unhinged and chaotic, and also explores questions around self and power, and is about this really unhinged lesbian, essentially. I wish I were kidding. It's not, I'm not kidding. But you know, it, because of kind of like where the popularity of girls' love and boys' love manga comes from, which is from, again, these like stories that are targeting specifically just girls, they're not necessarily, I would not necessarily say that they are particularly queer in mind and in conception, in that I don't necessarily feel like these authors wrote it specifically for 2S LGBTQ plus people. Now again, I gotta say, like, I am no like super expert in manga history. I'm not like a Japanese literature expert in any sense of the word, and I am not a Japanese lesbian, but I really feel as though, because of the complicatedness of girls' love manga, I don't know if I could say definitively that it is queer literature or that it is lesbian literature. I think that it is literature that happens to depict lesbians and other queer women in it. But a lot of these stories do not necessarily have the intention of depicting a lot of things around specifically the lived experiences of being a queer woman. I grew up reading a lot of GL and trying to get my hands on everything that I could, and I feel as though I can really say that there are totally opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to comics that depict lesbians in manga. There is, on one hand, comics that are written by lesbians and really explicitly for a lesbian audience, because they are published in like lesbian community magazines, are published in lesbian zines, they're self-published for lesbian readers, and then they're, and it's, and those stories are about lesbian life in Japan, and then there are stories that are about lesbians that are meant to, and I mean, if you yourself are a lesbian, you understand, that are meant to provoke and titillate. And I would say most popular published yuri manga floats somewhere in the middle, with a lot of it leaning towards the side of provocation and titillation. And at the same time, that's kind of why it's so complicated, because what I'm talking to you about today, this thing that's really precious to me, that I'm really, really passionate about, yuri manga, it was also a site of identity formation to me. I read yuri manga to read romance stories between women, because at the time when I was a young person, there really just weren't that many stories out there that weren't fan fiction in North America. Representations of queer women were really either not all that common and not all that accessible for me, or they were aggravating and made me even more confused and upset about being a queer person. So this is a conversation, obviously, as you can tell, that is very nuanced and complicated. And this is a topic that I think can span several episodes, with a lot more research and a lot more discussion with other perspectives. But I'm going to put a pin, I think, on this and revisit it later on in this series, because some of the manga that I want to recommend, I think, does have interesting approaches to discussing more of these like social issues that are relevant to the lives of queer women. So you can stick around for that in the coming weeks. I think for now we should listen.